and a wealth of information which will leave my mind and others' minds open with all these questions, all these amazing answers, and it's almost incomprehensible, all these difficulties that will arise. Well, I want to thank you very much for allowing me in with the question, and I thank you all very much for providing this TechNet and the space portion of it. I'll say 73. I'm going to listen for another 20 minutes or so. And thanks again. Thanks very much. I think I'll turn it back to you from Whiskey 2, November Hotel Zulu. 73.
Coming.
Yeah, Wes recognized. The thing that's very naive here, Matt, and others listening, is that almost every single high school kid today has a very positive attitude about space. I'm very happy they do. And if you asked almost every high school student today, what's the most exciting space adventure you can think of? A high percentage of them will say, I'd like to go to Mars. I mean, we've seen astronauts go to the moon. That was an exciting adventure. And naively, they want to think about going to Mars. And they don't get into these details, but you get into these details, and wow. To maintain a human being in space is a lot more difficult than first meets the eye. And so I can see how NASA is not saying anything to discourage our youth. For them to have a positive attitude and dream about going to Mars and dream about techniques to get ready to do it. Let me drop. To dream about the individual steps and get ready to do it, that's progress. But if they look at the end product of what is the investment in dollars, risk to life, investment, time, volume, space, and what do you get in return? That amount of resources spent on doing other things like getting rid of certain diseases and starvation problems, whatever we have on Earth. We got a lot of problems on Earth. And a certain percentage of our resources goes into space research, and I'm happy about that. But what percentage of the gross national product should go into space research? It would have to become an extremely high percentage of a large number of nations to support a Mars landing of a human being. Let's see what Wes got to say on all this. N2XJN, K2RIW. You got it, Wes.
N2XJN. In 1967, a microwave was $50,000. In January 1963, the cost of the house was $17,200. By the token, right now, one family house somewhere in Queens, approximately $500,000. If you take the quote $1,720, multiply it by 3, you will end up possibly with the cost of microwave. By the token, you may say that a microwave for today's money would cost $1.5 million. So you say, what do we have in exchange? If the technology becomes widely used, everything will drop down by 10 times. So when you say 100 times more to Mars than going to space, then we say it's about 10 times more than going to Moon. By that time, if you divide by 3, the difference, you will see that the cost of technology between going to Moon and going to Mars would be approximately 1.5. That's my mathematics. Center action.
Yeah, good sounding mathematics, but it might be misplaced, Wes. When it comes to the price of a microwave oven, and in the days when Percy Spencer at Raytheon was inventing the microwave oven, the method by which he did it made it a very large volume, expensive item. And when it became extremely popular, and now with the scale of mass production, that becomes an inexpensive item. That's a consumer product. There is no way you and I are going to make a human being more efficient where he doesn't require a house full of volume and a house full of mass of raw materials of oxygen, water, and food to maintain him. There's no scale that you can change that's going to change the requirements for a human being other than putting him into hibernation. And that makes good science fiction. I don't think you and I are going to see a year's worth of hibernation of a human being in any reasonable length of time. So you're not going to change the mass and volume of the, let me drop, of the consumables that are required to maintain life. When it comes to the amount of rocket power required to get you from the gravity well called Earth, and you get in orbit around the Earth, you get out of that gravity well, and then you make the transition between Earth and Mars, and then you drop down to the gravity well of Mars, and eventually drop down to the surface with a lander. The raw energy required to get you from Earth to Mars, that's not going to suddenly change. So we're into some very hard physics here. So the economy of scale of a microwave oven cannot be applied to the economy of scale of what it takes to maintain a human being and what amount of rocket power it takes to you to get it to Mars. That's not going to change. Yeah, somebody's going to make a more efficient rocket. I accept that. But are we suddenly going to come up with a brand new method of shielding the human being from all of the cosmic rays he's going to be exposed to for 3 solid years? Nobody's going to make a breakthrough in shielding. Unless you put X number of pounds of lead between you and that cosmic ray, you're not going to be shielded from it. So the economy of scale that you've used as an example on many of the things I'm worried about might not apply in 2XJN, K2RIW.
It's a good answer, but however, I didn't even mention the ratio between $1.5 million to today's price of $60 per microwave, and now take this ratio as the measure of advanced technology. I strongly believe that the first submarine built, although it was primitive, if that would be repeated in the similar form of it, would be much cheaper. But let's say we could say the cost of the first submarines built for the army, not the first one in the history of the United States. May say, if we take that cost, but that money would say that we have a very advanced submarine of today with whistles that the first one didn't have. I strongly believe that if the commercial space companies could make a much cheaper technology and also reliable one to make a money on it, then that's why they prove that NASA cannot do what the business could do. So as long as there is a need for doing something, they would do it. Although, there's a politics. There are plenty of evidence that the moon is a part of the Earth that ripped out during the Earth formation as a process of collision. And it does have a plenty of gold and plenty of precious materials. I wonder, why don't we go over there? So the price of gold doesn't drop down? And to exceed.
If you and I thought of the most valuable substance that we can imagine, gold, platinum, uranium, whatever, and if somebody discovered there's a huge amount of it sitting on the surface of the moon, and all you got to do is go and get it, with today's economics of getting to the moon, that would be the most expensive material in the world. So mining the material on the moon, or mining the material in an asteroid, on an asteroid or a comet, on paper it sounds good. I'm skeptical. But now, I'm gonna ask you the question, Wes. You heard my pessimistic sounding answer. Let me drop. You heard my pessimistic sounding answer of the specifics of the difficulty of getting a human being in a three-year mission approximately to and from Mars and try to bring him safely back to the surface of the Earth. I told you some of the things that made me skeptical. The bottom line for me is that I believe, I could be wrong, I know I'm pessimistic, I believe that my grandchildren will not see a human being standing on the surface of Mars. That's my belief. My grandchildren will not see that. You have a much more positive attitude. I want you to give me a speculation. When will N2XJN see a human being standing on Mars? Give me a rough guess. N2XJN, K2LAW.
Well, I'm much more pessimistic than I was 4 years ago when the similar subject was discussed. At that time, I was thinking about 2017. We didn't have a situation that is a much more troubling economically to that one that we were estimating as the factors for the space travel growth in 2010, say. It was 5 years ago. At that time, Boeing didn't know that the SpaceX program will win multi-billion dollars contracts to fly astronauts in the International Space Station. And there was an announcement, and that announcement was in 2014, 9/17/2014, saying that Boeing is getting into that. So that will be commercial crew program. That, of course, makes a competition to the other company that was thinking about doing that, and they were doing that pretty well. As long as we have a competition, we have a price control. So, when we have a price control, then we say, hey, we could have a plenty of other guys, namely Chinese. For Chinese, it is a matter of honor, not really the matter of money right now. And we have a Japanese. The situation has changed. That means right now we are interested with driving ruble down, and Russia is interesting of not bankrupt. So I would say that thing will probably delay the time of the men being on Mars for another 5 years. We have a 2014, I think we're going to have a 2019. And this is only if the echo of the findings about the precious materials, which is not only gold, the diamonds, and they have plenty of radioactive materials as well. So, we see that Russia stopped making plutonium in 1988, they will soon be having a problem with their nuclear warheads and their nuclear power stations. I say that Russia will be very pleased if they could put a hand on the material depository. So, as long as there is one part established, we're gonna have in the effect the same as we have with $1.5 million for today's money microwave that costs $60. But that's my belief. And Georgia.
WS.
Now, I'm going to ask the same question to Paul and to John in that order, but once again, I'm asking, what year do you believe a human being will stand on Mars? At first, it sounded like you said the year 2019.
No, not Mars, on Moon. On Moon, I said 2019, that would be on Moon.
Okay, I'm not going to challenge you on Moon. I'm asking Mars. Matt's original question was Mars.
1930.
Okay, 1927 to 1930, West believes a human being will be standing on Mars. I'm going to ask Paul and John in that order for their estimation. Paul, you've been studying space now for, I'm guessing, a good 40 years of your life. In the in the mind of WS2N right now are very rough guesses. When do you believe a human being will be standing on the surface of Mars? WS2N, K2RIW.
Okay. I would say I've been studying it since 1957, when I was 5 years old, so... I'm going to tell you, based on a lot of things that you said, Dick, are actually being worked on. So, for instance, the radiation, one theory is to line the walls with water. You're going to need water to bring with you. That will help cut back on the radiation. That's one theory. Another way to cut back on the cosmic rays is utilizing Bigelow's method of inflating cylinders. He's actually going to have one attached in 2016, throughout the whole year of 2016, and maybe beyond that to the International Space Station. And these cylinders have the ability to deflect cosmic rays and all this debris and everything, whatever it's going to be, better than the canned cylinders that we have up there that make up the space station. Also, hibernation is being worked on with some success. Let me drop it. Not complete hibernation, but the slowing down of the metabolic rate was just in the news recently. And they believe they can do this for long-term trips. Now, that won't happen in the beginning, but as time goes on, that could be a method. Gravity, that's another problem. I mean, right now they have to solve that problem. These guys go up to the space station, they land in Kazakhstan on the ground, and they have to carry them into a removal vehicle to get them back to Russia before they can even go home. And that's only after 5 or 6 months. They have a very hard time walking. So you can imagine a crew landing on Mars. Let me drop it. Where Mars, the gravity is, what, one-third or something there of what we have. So it's not as bad as here, but, you're going to be up there for 8 months, and you're going to land on solid ground, similar to Kazakhstan, but there won't be a crew there to carry you out. You're going to be laying there with four other astronauts, and somebody's going to say, can you get up? Could you take the first step? So that's going to have to be solved. And there was a project about 5 years ago, but they stopped funding it for the Solus. It was a spinning type of sphere. You take a bunch of like tin cans together and put them end to end and make a wheel out of it. And they were going to spin it on the end of the International Space Station, and eventually that would be attached to a spacecraft that would go to Mars. What the funding has stopped on that, but that would solve the gravity problem. Where you would go in there for periods of time. You wouldn't be able to walk around in it, but you could sleep in there, and this thing would be spinning, and that would help your bones. Not to mention all the exercise that they have to do on the space station, they'll have to do on the way to Mars to try to keep up their strength. Ion drive will be another thing that they'll probably try to use to try to increase the speed, cut back on the time that it takes to get from Earth to Mars and back. And money-wise, you talked about the multi-nation. Well, yeah, that is the plan, multi-nation. Right now, we built the Orion spacecraft, which took off successfully and landed a couple of weeks ago. That landed in the Pacific Ocean, coming back at 3,600-mile apogee. That was a big success, unmanned, of course. but it didn't have a service module attached to it. That means propulsion, oxygen, or your vital equipment is going to be built by the European Space Agency. The module is a takeoff of the ATV, the automatic transit vehicle that was sent up to the space station for five different flights to restock the space station. It was a very successful piece of equipment, and the service module is being modeled after that, and actually being built in Italy, and the shell of it, but the complete service module will be made by the European Space Agency and attached to the Orion spacecraft. So yeah, they already have their bid in for who's going to put their first toes down on Mars. I would go with 2035, July 4th, Independence Day. Back to you, WS2M.
Wow, that's an answer. 2035, July 4th, which is what, 21 years from now, to the mathematics correct, and 21 and a half or so years from now. Wow. That's going to require a couple of breakthroughs. Let's see what John's got to say. Hey, John. When's man going to be standing on Mars? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. Interesting questions. Well, first I'll take the moon. I don't think we're going to go back to the moon because even though people think there's exotic things there, I think it's very similar to the Earth. There's transportation is expensive. Until that's resolved, I don't think we'll be going to the moon. But Chinese want to go there by 2019 or whatever, fine. We're not going. Now, Mars. So many problems to resolve. I think it's going to be at least two generations plus some development time. I say 50 years, Dick. 50 years from now, we may have a successful Mars mission. I don't see it happening before that.
Don't you think that the advancement of flying to Moon, because of the competition, the Americans again being offended with Chinese just doing that, speed up the process?
So if I give it a year, 50 years from now is 2064. So you say 2064. Paul says 2035 on July 4th, and Wes said somewhere between 2027 and 2030. Isn't that roughly what you said there, Wes? Go ahead.
That's correct. That's the calculation, but there was an approximation, actually, that if the Chinese plan to go to the moon in 2019, there will be again this repeated situation from the competition between Russia and United States, who's going to be first on moon, and that would be rather again a political issue. How come Chinese do it and we cannot do it, and we did it but we stopped it, and then Chinese, of course, they want to do it not because they want to only do it, but because they want to get a profit from it. Once the technology of flying to moon will be perfected, that will be the next step. You got to understand that whatever is being used to go from Earth to the moon is just starting, landing, starting, and back landing. It's exactly the same what it is between Mars and us, only the distance is different. So yes, the modules that would be like a transfer station, that could be done. Everything is a matter of politics. I would say the worst scenario is year 2030, but 2027, I think already in 2020 we're going to have a big problem. Knowing that the number of the businesses that close up in America and in Europe and goes and transfer to China, unless they do something about the China and to actually
K2YO, we get the money. We're not going to get the money.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up Bernie in a minute. The guy who originally asked the question was Matt. I want to ask Matt to ask a question, but maybe Bernie has got a point of order. K2YO, K2RAW, go ahead, Bernie.
Just comment on Wes's 2019.
Go ahead, make your comment, Matt. I mean, Bernie.
Okay, yeah. The point is that 2019 is only 5 years out, and I'm not sure if the Chinese are going to be on the moon by then. They've got to start showing some progress. That if you look at how long it took us with the Apollo program to really get it spooled up. 5 years out, we were starting to make some waves already, and within 4 years, 3 years, within 3 years out, we were sending a lot of missiles up in the air. And so I really kind of question whether China can do it by 2019, unless they start sending some programs up soon and start doing things like, docking in space, spacewalking, all of those mechanics that took us a long time to master. They're going to have to master those same things, just my opinion. Dick?
63% for the past years out of 100, the transfer to China happened within the past last 5 years, 63%. So we see the growth. Now you take the ratio between the growth of the 100 and the last 5 years, so 63%, you would say the next 5 years would be much more speedy. So I would say my estimate of 2027 is just because China will possess most of European and American businesses. And to agree.
Yeah, Paul recognized, but let me go back to Matt. Matt's the guy who asked this original question. And if Matt's got an answer, a guess. It's a vague guess on all of our part, let's face it. But Matt, if you're still there, into November Hotel Zulu. Make a rough guess, Matt. When do you think mankind might be standing on the surface of Mars? W2NHZ, K2RIW. Yeah, Matt did say he's going to have to leave us in a few minutes, and maybe he did. Paul, you want to add to your estimation? WS2N, K2RIW.
No, I just, if they get the money. And right now, NASA just got $18 billion for next year. Went up a little bit. They need to get the money. I mean, they need to double that. Then they can make some headway. Then I'll change my vote to what Wesley's saying in the late 2020s. But if they don't get the money, the competition isn't there. Yeah, that's true with the Chinese competition. More money could be put into the space program. So that'll help. You can't, they can't go to the moon probably until 2021, 2022 for China. Right now they're planning another flight. They just did one flight that went around the moon and came back. The next one up will be about another year and a half from now. It'll be a landing mission, and then they plan on having a sample return after that. So that's going to eat up some time, probably 2019, and maybe a manned mission in 2022. As far as they've done spacewalks and they've done docking with the Chinese space station, so I mean they got a little bit of experience with that. Back to you, Dick.
One more comment. You just try to understand something. It's not that the way exactly like you see it. Here's the situation. We have a problem with Russia. Russia wants to really give the kick to America. Russians, they have a problem with a quite big amount of money to spend to build the gas piping to China to make money on China. China may ask, that's what actually I see from Russian media, China ask for help with their space program. And Russian, they have a plenty of experience. Now, Russian try to trade because they don't have money. with the know-how. Now, that is actually speeding up. The more Russia is in your trouble, the more Russia wants to kick. Now, the Chinese, they're getting, because of the price of the ruble, and they have it off, they're getting almost for free all of the knowledge that Russian could do it. One of the things that is happening in here. Second one, guys, think how much money was not made, not lost, not made because of the cost of the oil. $40, $60 per barrel versus $120 or the $130, $140 at most. That's because of what? The politics. And now, nothing is wrong. Everybody is happy, everybody has cheap oil, and that is not going to help them to change to after 2015, simply because of one thing. It's not going to change because right now when people have more money, they will spend, and the economy will move. Not only in the United States, but in Europe as well. That's what it is. So, if they could afford 3, 4, 5 space travels to moon and come back to lose on oil, which nobody's losing, because Saudis are selling 3, 4 times more oil for cheaper price, they still make money. If, by the same token, the same thinking, if you take the whole picture with the Russian cooperation with Chinese right now, that might happen in 2019. People might pretty much be working on exploring the moon pretty soon. Once Chinese get there, Americans will not give up. And Moore's law is another one. So I see that 2027, 2030 for the Mars, just because of that experience with landing, getting and getting out, to pretty much real. That's where she is.
Okay, I put a big red mark around these estimates on that page. So in the future, I'm going to be able to go back to this page and see how good these guesses are as to what year mankind will stand on Mars. And although some of these difficulties I've indicated can be conquered, can be ameliorated, can be lessened, can be improved, still the politics is going to dominate. I'll show you what I mean by that. In the case of President Kennedy saying he's going to send a man to the moon and bring him safely back to the Earth, we were in the middle of a really very big Cold War with the Soviet Union at that time. I lived through that era where I was working on military hardware, and I could see the amount of fear that people had at that time. The Cold War scared the daylights out of a lot of people. It was a straw man, but we didn't know that at the time. But that was a very strong driving force. In the case of going to Mars, we don't have that driving force, and each of the nations that are going to have to make a significant contribution, a significant percentage, let me drop
one YDY comment.
Okay, YDY in a minute. They're going to make a significant contribution of their gross domestic product. They're going to say, what am I getting in return? Mike, number two, I think it is, YDY, yeah. Are you willing to make a guess as to what year man will be standing on Mars? YDY, K2RIW.
You know, you commented about the Cold War, and I think that a lot of us in 2013, 2014 here, almost 2015, we forget about it. So when I worked for Grumman, we were actually encouraged to buy diesel vehicles that didn't have electronics. I remember I had a diesel Mercedes station wagon that I was driving, and I had a carbon pile voltage regulator for the alternator. So in the event of an EMP pulse, you know, I would have a device that I could continue to operate. Now, I look back at that and I laugh, but, you know, we really believed that it was possible that, you know, between the Soviets and the Chinese, somebody would detonate something overhead that would have that capability. That Cold War was, that fear of the Cold War was very real and very palpable, and I don't think unless you have something like that in the future that we're really going to be able to put our sticks together and work together to make something like this to go to Mars. And one YDY.
Yeah, it's going to take that kind of really drastic driving force. I've seen what happened when we were preparing for the Gulf War. I've seen what was happening for what we thought was a preparation for the ultimate output of the Cold War. And I saw what I'm calling the military mind, the scared philosophy that, boy, we better get it right, otherwise we're going to lose the game. And we don't have that in this case. That's not a driving force. There's no great valuable stuff there. So each nation that's going to have to contribute is going to ask the question, what do I get for my money? What do I get in return? I'm going to get some knowledge about the Martian surface. I'm going to get some knowledge about whether or not it had the possibility of harboring life in the past. But curiosity, spirit, and opportunity, these spacecraft that we've sent down to Mars and various orbital spacecraft, let me drop it, have gathered a lot of data. And there's more data to be gathered about whether or not Mars did have or could have had life. And is that knowledge of the past possible life of Mars, and there appears to be very little evidence that life is there now on Mars. That environment has become much too harsh with cosmic rays, solar wind, lack of magnetic field, lack of atmosphere, cold temperature, and high wind. Very little wind at very high velocity, very cold atmosphere, very little surface water. It's not a very hospitable place. It's not really in the right place in the Goldilocks zone, the right-sized planet that can hold on to an atmosphere. So life there today is pretty severe. An astronaut outside of his habitat on Mars is going to have to live in a spacesuit. Let me drop.
Have a comment.
John recognized. You talk to an astronaut who has lived for 8 hours inside of a spacesuit, with the bottom of his body wrapped in a diaper, a highly absorbent diaper, and he's got this great big pack on his back that's giving him heat, oxygen, water, and so on. And the maneuverability he's got in that spacesuit, because of the way the joints require quite a bit of muscle power to bend. You talk to an astronaut who has lived for 8 hours in a spacesuit, like Sperry Musgrove did while doing the repair mission on the Hubble Space Telescope. Now you try to picture an astronaut living that way for day in and day out, many hours per day. Wow. KC2WGB. Would you volunteer for that one, John? K2RIW.
Well, I learned a long time ago, never volunteered to. Don't want to do that. But, you know, I think what we're all forgetting, too, is look at the equipment we have now and what we had 20 years ago. How? Look at what we're going to have 20 years from now. Almost AI, I'm sure it's going to be very close. We're going to have much smaller, faster computers, machines that will be able to do marvelous things. So now, if a man can only do 10% more than the machine, or even 20%, what is the purpose of this big Mars mission? Just to say we've been there? I think you're 100% right, Dick. It's going to be very difficult to sell that to the intelligent public. If, well, that's a no-brainer. But, you know, across the world, and to have these people invest trillions of dollars, I believe it'll be over $1 trillion to go to Mars. So, why bother if machines can do it? Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
Guys,
437
days, 0.7 of the day. There is the record of Russia, Valery Polakov.
Turned it over to Dick.
Yep. And after those 437 days when he came back to Earth, guarantee he did not walk away from that landing. I wonder, for how many days was he bedridden before he could get up and stand? What do you think, Wes?
I don't understand the question, but it was 1994. There were 437.7 days. And it was the longest, it was Soyuz TM with Valery Polakov. Then all of the records, 279, 265, whatsoever, then was 207 days, no Americans. So 207.5 days, that was the shortest from the long one records that was in 1998. We have 1982, we have 211 days. 1982. That's why Russia, China needs Russia. And that's why right now in this situation they're doing a lot just for to get those brains and to achieve.
I looked up the amount of gravity on Mars, and it's 37.8%, call it 38% of Earth gravity. So an astronaut getting on Mars, trying to stand up, will have a slightly easier job as far as his mass is concerned. But he's going to be carrying another 100 pounds or 150 pounds of spacesuit on his back. So from his point of view, standing, flexing his muscles and whatever on Mars is not going to be that much easier than on Earth because of the spacesuit he's going to have to wear. And that spacesuit is going to be quite a bit more elaborate than the ones we've used up till now. Mars quite often has temperatures like minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Therefore, a very significant amount of kilowatts of heat are going to have to be generated by that backpack on that spacesuit to keep him from freezing. That's a severe environment. I'm reasonably sure I don't want to go there. That's a tough one. And yeah, you're going to call it scientific research and looking for the past evidence of life. And our remotely piloted vehicles are getting, let me drop, are getting smarter, faster, lighter, smaller, and so on. So the next thing that we send there after Curiosity is going to be a real, we're getting more and more to the point of sending a complete laboratory, so to speak, that can make any measurement you want and mail the data home in high definition color and stereographic pictures if that's what you want. So that's a place where you send a machine. I see very little evidence of benefit of sending a human. The good news about a human is he can make a decision on the spot saying, I'm going to walk around this rock and I'm going to take a chip out of that rock. Yeah, he can make decisions a little bit faster. And to do it by a remotely piloted vehicle, you got to go through a number of steps to do that. But that remotely piloted vehicle is not demanding a huge number of cubic meters of oxygen per day and a certain amount of calories of water and food per day and a certain amount of significant waste disposal per day. That machine is not demanding that. A human being does. We take for granted what this Earth does for us. Let me drop. This Earth takes every single molecule of gas, liquid, and solid that comes out of a human being and in some number of years recycles every single bit of it. And for you to do that in space, take every single molecule of air, gas, liquid, and solid coming out of a human being and recycle it. The words roll off the tongue very easily. To really do that and to recycle it back into a palatable, usable form, we've got a long way to go on that one, as I see it. And without recycling, you can't send 9 households with a mass and volume there in order to sustain the human beings, in order to give them the consumables required to maintain life. That's a tough requirement. That's a lot of stuff to recycle. And boy, if any of that recycling material has the slightest amount of hiccup during the 3 years you're there, it's game over. Anybody got further comments on my pessimistic story? Give me a call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
WS2N.
Hey, Paul. I'm reasonably sure you're not going to volunteer for this one. Go ahead, Paul.
Nope, I guess not. The space station has a machine on board, one of the nodes, the Tranquility node, and it recycles the oxygen and carbon dioxide and all of that. It sends the carbon dioxide back through the machine. And it does a pretty good job, but the problem is the couple of the valves keep breaking, and
down, the machine is down a lot, and then they fix it, and it's down again. You can't have that on the way to Mars, unfortunately. You can't have these things breaking down. We'll see, Dick. I just wanted to make one announcement that if anybody had any questions in this regard or anything to do with the space program, I could be reached at spacenetreport@gmail.com. I didn't mention that before, Dick. Back to you, KGRIWWS2M.
How are we going to find out what Mars smells like, Dick?
I don't think I care what Mars smells like. When a human being consumes oxygen, food, and water, and he metabolizes that food, and he gets, let me pick a number, 2,000 kilocalories per day out of that process. And you and I can boil that down into BTUs per hour and watts per hour and so on. A human being is consuming something like 150 watts continuously, 24 hours a day, by metabolizing that food. And now you take those materials and reprocess them. If you could do it with the same efficiency with what the human being does it, you're going to take 150 watts. It's going to take more than that. In the case of the machine on the space station, you got these huge solar cells generating the power to run the machinery that does a little bit of the reprocessing. But you're going to have to do much deeper reprocessing of solid material as well as liquid material on a Mars mission. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to find that it takes a kilowatt of energy per human being to maintain that machinery, just to keep it running, assuming it never has a breakdown. WS2N, K2RIW.
Good. You're running out of time, too. And not only that, you get out to 1.6 AU. That's going to cut back on your solar efficiency. So whatever panels you have here, well, if it was twice as far, inverse square, and then you're going to need four times the space. It becomes outrageous. I think you better send a RTG, a radioisotope thermoelectric generator with them to power the stuff. Back to you, Dick.
And now you have to shield the human beings from that. Into XJN. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, I'm going to remain more optimistic, guys. The last 10 records are held by Russians. In 1982, Russia had a power with the feeding and the briefing and waste for 215.4 days in space. There was a Soviet Union at then. And the only one time in the history of space when there was 215.4 days was just because Michael Lopez from Algeria, that was starting as a United States citizen, was able to get to the International Space Station with Michael Turin from Russia. There was never a situation, at least I don't know of it, there was such a long period of time without participation of Russian. And you guys, now for China, it's three times cheaper to get a Russian knowledge, know-how, than it was just half a year ago. And they were announcing that 2019 would be the year they go to Moon at Moon Day. Cash revolution 2013. And to actually,
Russians never made it to the Moon.
Okay, you guys have listened to an unusual technet, simply because Matt in New Jersey asked us this unusual question about sending a man to Mars. That was technet number 1535. We intend to be back next week and settle some of these issues and create a few more. Be kind to each other. See you next week. Over to you, John. Bye-bye, John. Bye-bye, you all. See you guys later.
73, Merry Christmas from WS2N.
Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Woodside-ish.
saltpeter peanut food?
I can't take advantage of a lovely hammered Asian girl.
The dream come true for you.
No, I know. Did you meet her when you were there? I don't remember, because she's like a per diem by us. She works, she's like a, not a phlebotomist, she's a, like, I guess a lab tech. She works at NYU, that's her main job. But she comes by us per diem, for fiddling work.
Little carpe diem with her per diem?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if you met her or me, Miss Chen. Who no longer hangs around with us. She got married. She's, I guess, on the no-touch list.
Me no love you long time.
Got a picture of her and Barbie dancing, I'll send to you. Anyway, yesterday I was like, I don't know, a little sluggish. Came home at 3 on Saturday night, so it was a little sluggish, to say the least. But I got stuff done. Took the veteran spin to clear my head a little bit. Really didn't work.
I hear you. I hear you. We'll actually work at the base, at the base, right at Rockefeller Plaza, right there where the tree is. We were there. We started at 10 Saturday night, and my partner and I bailed at about 6:45, and the other guys stayed to finish up. Because they had a problem until about 8:15. So it was a long night.
Jimmy, you don't have the same cell number anymore, right?
Yeah, I ported my phone over. Everything's exactly the same.
Alright, here comes the picture then.
Got a new phone number. Got a new iPhone. Alright, I'll take a look at it when I get a chance.
You said there was a lot of fondling going on. Okay. See you down by the Rock Center. They still have the big crowds there. I'm wearing my NYPD blue today. So, I'm adhering to the call to arms.
Quite a lot of crowds. The tree shut off at 1 a.m. The crowds started to thin down. And then, I think it relit somewhere around 4:30, 5 o'clock, and people started showing up again.
One of the guys from our place works the ice skating rink there. He provides the refrigeration for it. One of our regulars in the boiler room.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And, of course, Saturday Night Live was on this weekend. And was it Amy Adams, I think, in One Direction? So there was, like, a gazillion people waiting by the, you know, by the side doors there, waiting to catch a glimpse of somebody. So it was quite fun trying to even get on the block. It was a lot of fun.
I'm afraid.